Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes, hello everyone, and as they say, we better get started. Tonight, I have a special guest, and we are going to have a two-part show with him. I met this gentleman in Sedona recently on a tour that he was leading. And it was, by the way, it was a very wonderful tour. And we began talking a little bit about some of the experiences in the area. And that led to my asking him some questions. And from that, he is now on the show. And I am just very, very pleased to have him here. So I am going to give you just a little bit of a brief background about him, because I think the rest of the shows are going to give you more than what you've bargained for here, as well as a plug for one of his new adventures that he is going to partake in with a friend of his. And I'm going to go to this website right now because I would like you to write this title and name down and give them some love. Actually, it's a very, very interesting website. Very fun, from what I can tell. Well put together. Interesting stuff. And let's start with you writing this down. So I need you to go to Sedona West, which is SedonaWest. SedonaWest.com. And when you are on this site, you're going to see some interesting stuff. And this is a, I don't know if it's what they call it, a resort. Not really, but a campground. But a campground and an RV park that offers a lot to the guests there. One of the things I did not look at strongly enough here, so forgive me, and I don't want to get this wrong, but I'm not sure if it's just for those who are staying at the park with their RVs, or if people can just come and go and do some extra activities at the park and then go home for the evening. Let me give you a little bit of a briefer about this, and then we'll get into our discussion with John. And then maybe you could write him and ask him a little bit more about how to get more involved in this. So I'm only going to read you a portion of this website. So it says that it will enhance your discovery, your exploration, experimentation, and enjoyment factors. I can already see that from what is listed here on the site. Let's see. It does work with in collaboration with the Arizona Parks and Trails and U.S. Forestry Service Okay, that's good. That means it's a really beautiful place, and it is. Just from looking at it, it's making me want to go there. At Sedona West, it says we educate, enlighten, illuminate, and inform guests and visitors who appreciate and love the solace and serenity found here. And that includes the location and the territory. It says that this high camp destination is a world-renowned, iconic Wild West destination offering many choice options. And they call it, it says, made popular by the very well-known Bradshaw Ranch and other related icons of the early days of the American West. And so that's that gives you a good start. Secondly, when I look up at the kind of like the headings, it's got a campground, an RV park. It has something called Weekend Warrior. So it looks to me like you don't have to, I'm not sure. I'm not going to, don't hold me on this. I think we need to ask John a little bit about whether this is something that only campground visitors or guests and RV park guests can do. But it has quad, ATV quad rentals, dirt bike rentals, horseback tours, classic car rentals, trout fishing, and something called Legends and Lore. And then, of course, it's a place to rest. And then also, John was telling me that he will be doing UFO tours on this property site. And so if you go into this site and you click on the UFO portion of it, he's got a big dialogue here, big dialogue about the UFO experience. And I think that I think you're going to be really interested in what you see here, because I'm just flipping through right now. And yeah, makes me want to get on the airplane and get out there and go and do this, because it actually looks really fun. So anyway, not enough of me drooling here over, oh, that's a really good picture, John. If you go into that site or that tab and go all the way to the bottom, you're going to see John pointing his finger, and you're going to see an image of a UFO alien mimicking his pointing. That's really good. I like that. Very good. So very nicely done. Okay, well, let's see here. I need to go back up here a moment. SedonaWest.com. Looks to me like you're not going to be disappointed at all. I want to see what the special services are here, though, before we get out of this. Special services. Gives you kind of the Wild West experience. Oh, lots of dialogue here about the outbacks and everything. Oh, yeah, really cool. Very interesting. Oh, yeah, very good. Wow, it's almost like a resort. I mean, with all the amenities, but in a different way. Boy, I'll tell you, I'm sitting here jumping up and down already. Anyway, so we better get out of this site, because I could spend an entire hour just looking at it. So once again, SedonaWest.com, and I think you will enjoy what you're seeing there. All right, a little bit more about John. John, to me, John is like the jack of all trades, right? Someone who's put his hand in a number of things over time, and he's finally, I wouldn't say finally found his passion, but I think that his passion is coming through more now. As we age, we have a tendency to exhaust what we thought were our passions in the past, and then we move into just other interests or hobbies or whatever. But John is also a UFO tour guide, and that's why he's all part of this Sedona West experience. And also, I don't know how long he continues to do this, but he's also a tour guide, master tour guide in Sedona. And so, yeah, if you ever go to Sedona, look him up, John Polk. Let's see, what else can I tell you about him? Well, he's got both, obviously, he's got both paranormal and extraterrestrial visitations. Yep, and that's going to be interesting during the show. And I think that's about it for the moment, because I think I want to save some of this stuff for the show. I just don't want to give him all away. So, without further ado, sit back. Here we go. Mr. John Polk. Stay tuned.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Just one cautionary this evening. When John and I interviewed a few nights ago, the powers that be would not allow him to speak to me via Zoom. And so we had to do the interview with me speaking like this and having him speak over his phone. So I apologize in advance if the quality is not like you are used to, but I wanted him to do this interview and we got it done. And so just bear with me that what you're hearing tonight is Mr. John Polk with his interview and me, of course, on his phone. All right, hold tight. Well, John, I am so excited to have you on the show tonight. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Schutz.
John and I go back a little bit to a tour that I took while in Sedona just recently, and he was so fascinating to me that I just had to have him on this show. So I'm so glad you're here. And I want to, John, do like I do with all the other guests. I think people get really interested in wanting to know a little bit about where all this kind of began. And John has experiences and in both paranormal and UFO activity and visitations and all that. And so, and he has for a very long time. So, John, why don't you start us out probably at the beginning? And I want to go all the way back to when you were a child as to when you started to first recognize that you might have had a gift or something, that you were a little bit different than all your friends.
So when I was a child, I was starting to see apparitions, if you will. And my mother, who is just as spiritual as you can get, she knew what was happening with me. And instead of her going, "Oh, honey, it's your imaginary friend," you know, she didn't do that. She was so brilliant. What she did, and my mom was this master artist, so she's like, "How about this? Don't tell me what you saw. How about you draw a picture of what you saw? I'll paint a painting based on what I saw, and we'll compare our pictures." And I'm using crayon back at the time, and my mom is this prolific artist. But we would compare the pictures, and not every single time, but most of the time, what we were both drawing was the same thing. And then we would talk about it. And so, and then when I was, you know, less than 10 years old, she started working with me on developing my psychic abilities, expanding my consciousness, navigating the astral plane. And, you know, I give all the credit to my mother for who I am today.
So, John, was your mother a psychic or a medium? Because usually when people are really super creative, they expand their abilities, and they don't even realize this most of the time, that if you're super creative and you really love that sort of thing, that you're expanding some of your psychic abilities. Did she ever come out to you to say that she was or was not a psychic or a medium?
Oh, absolutely, she did. But she would only do that in certain company. You know, my father, who was a university president for 35 years, PhD in education, he thought she was nuts. My mom and I, we had a special connection, unlike that with my brother, who who she was equally close to, but it was just a very different connection. And so she knew to groom me in the way that she did, and she kind of took it on as like an intergalactic responsibility to help me connect with the other side in ways I never even thought were possible or even understood that could be possible as I was just a child at the time. But Mom knew exactly what to do with me, and I give my mom 100% of the credit for what I am doing today.
Interesting. Bring me back and bring my listeners back, and of course now they're your listeners tonight. I want you to go back to the earliest age you can possibly think of. And if you can remember, if you're able to remember this, we would love to hear what was your first type of experience in a mini story that you can tell, where you sat up and you really took notice. Do you remember any of those details?
I do. So, you know, prior to Mom and I drawing the pictures and comparing pictures, I was probably 3 or 4 years old. I'm one of few humans on this planet who can actually remember being 2 years old, but I can remember being about 2, 3, 4 years old, and there was something under my bed, and that's very common for children. However, in my case, I'm pretty confident that there was something under my bed, and that I was being visited, and it came out through a hypnotic regression that I was visited from the time my mother was pregnant with me, back in 1969, actually, where it came out through a regression that my mother was pregnant with me and my brother 2.5 years later for over 10 months. And anymore, they're not going to allow that to happen. They're gonna induce the labor. But it came out through the regression that my mother was visited while she was pregnant with me, and that the Anunnaki, if you really want to go there, that came out through the regression, the Anunnaki took my mother and did something with my DNA and my brother's as well 2.5 years later in 1972. And through the regression, it came out that that's why she was pregnant so long, because it just took me longer to neurologically cook. So where I got all the spirituality is, you know, I do ghost and UFO tours in Sedona, Arizona. My brother was a champion weightlifter who was being scouted by the Olympics back in the 80s. And also when he went to college, they give you aptitude tests. He scored higher than anybody in the 80-year history of the university. So he got the brains and the bronze, and I got the spirituality. And I don't like to use the word experiment, because I believe it's part of a program where they were monitoring us in a program and seeing and testing us over a period of time to see how we progressed. And a million things had to fall into place for me to land here in Sedona for the third time. And that's why I'm here now. And now I'm one of the biggest UFO tour guides in the entire world, living here in Sedona, Arizona. And I'm humbled by what's happening to me in my life right now.
Interesting. You know, you bring up a couple things which I think the listeners want maybe just a tiny bit of clarification on here. So first of all, you're the second person I have ever spoken with. I didn't interview the other gal, but I learned of this gal when she went to a conference about a year or so ago, who was actually in this, I guess you want to call it, pregnancy program. And she also came to learn of her role in all of this. Now, I can't recall, though, if she ever had kids. I don't think she did, but I want to ask about what is the, and forgive me for getting lots of names wrong here, what is the Anunnaki? Can you explain that to people?
Okay, so Anunnaki means from heaven to earth they came, and I wrote a book about it. It's called Yahweh, the Biblical God, is an Alien. So, in effect, the Bible, in my mind, and this is basic ancient alien theory also, as professed by, you know, Eric von Daniken, Giorgio Tsoukalos, and David Childress, who's an executive producer for Ancient Aliens, who lives about 45 minutes from where I live here in Sedona, Arizona. But it's ancient alien theory that the Bible is basically the alien handbook. All of the archangels, they all appeared in fallen angels, was it Genesis 6, sons of the God descended to earth and mated with the daughters of men. Well, guess what? The fallen angels, or the sons of the gods, mating with mortals, they yeah. can't be angels. They can't be, angels don't have sex. Angels are angels. They're ethereal beings. They don't have physical bodies. Well, in the Bible they do. And so therefore, they are the fallen Anunnaki. Basically, they were fighting against Yahweh, or Enlil of the Anunnaki, who is basically God represented in the Bible. And he was a tyrant, and still is, and he's known as the God of War. And at one time, all of the cultures around the world spoke the same language. Well, they wanted to divide us and create different languages and different religions so that we would fight each other. And so us fighting with each other means we're not fighting with them. And this was all done on purpose. And this the same paradigm is still in place today. And I'm very, very much aware of what's happening, and I don't like it. It's created a divide. You know, the most important race on this planet is the human race, and people often forget that. And we're all just as important as anybody else. We're all important. We're all part of the same pie. And we need to come together as a collective consciousness and learn to love each other. But that's not what their agenda is. You know, their agenda is depopulation right now. And I have a big problem with that. In my mind, the way to depopulate the planet is to depopulate them and allow us ascended light-working masters to propagate this planet and eliminate them from this planet.
Interesting. I need to have you step back for a second. I want to focus on your mom here when she was pregnant with you. Let's see. So my question would be this. Does she recall ever being abducted by any kind of this force of which you mention here? Does she remember this at all, or at what point do you think that came to her as a realization?
You know, when she was pregnant with me, her doctors were arguing with her, and my mother has, you know, always been a summa cum laude of everything. She's never made a B in her life. She's one of the most intelligent women you'll ever meet. She used to work for the government in conjunction with the FBI, an incredibly sharp lady. I know that my mother knows herself and knows her body also. And she used to look like Sophia Loren back in the day. Mom, I'm absolutely positive at the time she didn't really understand what was happening, but she just knew that based on, you know, a woman's cycle or their periods, that, you know, and her doctors were arguing with her. She's like, I know my body, I know my cycle with my periods. You know, guess what? I was pregnant for over 10 months with both of my sons, me in 1969, my brother in 1972. I don't think it was for a number of years until she actually realized what had happened. I think once I was a child and I started to see things around 3, 4, 5 years old, then she started to realize what was happening. But I don't think it happened at the time.
Yeah, I've heard of this before. I mean, so what you're saying isn't drawing more questions from my mind. It might draw questions from the listeners tonight, but the thing is that most people do not recognize or realize that sometimes when things don't seem quite right, there's always, I was just mentioning this on a show a few back, that when you have different professions, the medical profession, the law profession, all kinds of professions, everybody is trained to think a certain way. And when you put something alternative into the mix here, this isn't going to go over like with major acceptance. I'll give you just a little example here. So I went to the doctor and I had this handprint on my body. And this is how John and I actually had our first conversation with each other when we were in Sedona. And I was telling John about, do you know anyone who understands handprints? Because I'm looking for somebody. And that's how John and I hit it off. Okay, so when I brought this up to one of my doctors, and it wasn't a regular doctor, it was a guy who did believe in paranormal experiences and stuff like that, once I kind of told him what I did, because they always ask, and I don't mind telling them, but they sometimes look at you really weird. I did ask him, I said, have you ever heard of anyone having a handprint on their body before? And he went into complete shutdown. And so now he knew that just even saying just an inkle about believing in the paranormal was crossing the line in his profession and what he was trained to do and how to think. And basically that discussion was no more. So yeah, do I understand the craziness when someone goes in and tries to say, I know my body and something's weird here? I was just bringing this up on the show, the other day too, with another guest. I said, you know how crazy it is to go into a doctor and say, can I have a CAT scan or an MRI? I think I've got something in my body that just something is not making sense here. They would, first of all, they would not know how to justify it. So obviously it'd be an elective. Anything elective is going to come out of your pocket. So even if they agree to it, and half the time they won't agree to that stuff. So John, let's move this a little bit. I'm going to creep, because I find this very interesting. Now you, at the young age, you're knowing that something's a little bit unique and different about yourself compared to others, because obviously you're probably realizing they're not having the same types of, your friends are not having the same types of experiences as you. I want to go into grade school and middle school and high school with you for a second. And I want to hear about any experiences and or reactions and or what you had to do, if you kept quiet or if you talked about this in any what way, and what kind of reactions you were getting.
Okay, so when I was in, back in the day it was called junior high, but middle school, I started to see something in the mirror, and I knew there was something there. I didn't exactly know how to explain it to myself or to anybody else, so I kind of kept it to myself. No, I didn't kind of, I totally kept it to myself. I talked to my mom about it a little bit, but I really just kind of just sat on it and didn't let anybody really know what was happening with me. But I would see something in the mirror, specifically in the mirror, and I would call it you, like me and you. I would look into the mirror and I would see you, and you was actually me, my higher self. That's why I interpret it now. But I didn't talk about it with really anybody, except a little bit with my mom, and I ended up writing a poem about it at one time when I was in high school. But it was very, very real to me, and it was kind of my initiation into communicating and navigating the astral plane on the other side. That was the very beginning of it, and I was still an infant in many ways in my spiritual maturation and conquest. I knew something was happening. Didn't exactly understand it, but I did know it was happening, and I knew that it was something very real about it, but for fear of judgment and ridicule, I never told any of my friends, period. Talked to my mom about it some. I never talked to my father about it, because he wouldn't have believed me anyway. So you know how that goes, you know, when you have these kind of certain traits when you're young. You know, either talk about it or you don't, and if you do talk about it, you do it at the risk of being judged critically, and I guess there was a fear factor involved. I didn't want people to know what was happening to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's very tough at that age, because unless somebody else brings something similar up first, which kind of opens up the door for some of us to talk about our experiences freely, provided they're not, you know, find something out about you and then they want to kind of do some trickery, which is very, very rare from my experience. But I've never really had anyone, you know, try to lead me down a path, and then all of a sudden you find out that they weren't being sincere on their end about it. But it is a hard call to make when you are, especially in your growing years, to and around your peers and all your friends. Now, even after when you leave high school, of course, everything changes because you kind of all blast out of there in every which direction and you never see half of them ever again, which is, you know, what we all learn along the way. You might hang on to some of them for a while and then they eventually fall off and you make new friends or new acquaintances. But it's really tough to want to put yourself out there. I do remember one guy in my grade, and you are probably, it's from the way it sounds like you're 8 years younger than myself. That's the way it sounds. I do remember he used to talk a lot about how he wanted to make movies and films, and he wanted to do things with like the planets and spaceships and all that kind of thing. And he was really super, super fascinated by all of that. And I will tell you, he became relatively isolated very quickly because nobody could relate to the level he was at, where he wanted to go, and why on earth. Oh yeah, he wants to deal with spaceships, you know, that kind of thing. And it put him right into a corner of isolation. To this day, I'd have to try to look him up. I don't remember his name, but I would be curious to know where his path brought him. So now you're getting out of high school and you're going out into the world and you know you have some of these gifts within you, and you've experienced some things that were going on. So tell us a little bit more about your journey after leaving high school.
Okay, so I graduated high school from Daytona Beach, Florida in 1987. And in my senior year, I wrote a book of poetry, and it was called Beyond Oblivion Through the Crevices in Between. And I was doing a lot of psychedelics back then, and in effect, that was my that was the way I kind of translated it into this kind of physical reality. And my poetry was winning awards around the country at the time. And it was almost all of it was based on the paranormal, and most of it was based on navigating the astral plane. And some of the downloads that I would receive were just unbelievably compelling. And, you know, my mother loved my poetry and worked with me. I mean, she allowed me to be the poet that I was, but she would work with me on certain words and on my vernacular. My mom is basically a walking thesaurus and would help me with certain words to make my poetry that more appealing and provocative. And so I go back and I read that poetry today as I'm almost 53 years old, and I can see that there was never a veil, that I was just walking right through the cloak of invisibility, and it was pretty incredible. And then I went to college, and I was one of only 22 people accepted into the broadcasting program at Florida State University in 1990, which to me was a huge, huge deal. And then my soul expanded even more. Just an incredible journey that I had been on post high school into college. And I wanted to become a broadcaster. I wanted to get into news and sports broadcasting. And it didn't take me long to figure out that that is not what I wanted to do. They were changing my stories. They were filtering all my information. They were basically making me lie and not allowing me to tell the truth based on a lot of things that were happening in the political climate and at the university at the time. So I realized, you know, this is not what I want to do. So I got into sales, and that kind of spun me out of my whole spirituality, getting into sales. And that was in my early 20s after high school and college.
When you talk about how it spun you out of your spirituality into sales, what was the key component there? What do you think happened that took you away from that momentarily?
I learned not the hard way, but I learned I was really, really into sales. I mean, like an uncanny knack for sales, like breaking industry records. And I would break my own industry records in sales. And I was basing it all on money. And it took me a number of years to learn, don't base your success on money. Base it on what it takes to make the money. So instead of, you know, I used to go $800,000, $900,000 a day. I learned to focus on people's faces, people coming up to me and spending money, but it wasn't so much them spending money, it was them coming up to me. I had some kind of like contagious energy that would draw people to me, and I put them in a very safe place where they felt comfortable so that they would spend money. And then what I started to do, I created this own exercise in my mind where I would visualize their faces, having never met them before. Having never met them before, I'd visualize people's faces from different parts of the country and around the world. And lo and behold, I would see these people come up to me and buy my products that I was selling. And once I started basing it on people as opposed to the monetary, I was breaking my own sales records that I set in the first place. And I knew there was something going on, and everybody that knew me knew something was going on to me. Just because I had this uncanny knack for selling products and services and working with people. And a lot of people don't like to work with people. However, I do. And, you know, I met you, you know, I was as a tour guide. And I just enjoy working with people. And I feel like I have some kind of consciousness that when I work with people, which I do on a daily basis, it spreads to them. And then when they go home, a part of my consciousness goes with them, and then they spread it to other people also. And that's something that I like to focus on, because it's kind of like a domino effect where I affect somebody, and then it affects them, and then they affect somebody carrying my energy, and then that energy just keeps going. And they don't even realize it, but it is. And it spreads across the country and around the world. And I have people, like tonight, I have six people on UFO tonight, and they're all going to come to my house, and three of them are repeat customers. And I'm just so blessed to be able to do what I do, and it's just the greatest high for me ever.
So a question for you, John, as you're speaking, one of the things just kind of crossed my mind. So yeah, I would say that whatever was downloaded within you through your DNA, through your genetic line, through your mom, of course. I'm just curious, is your mom still alive or did she pass away?
She's alive, and she's actually on her way here now. She'll be here in a couple of days. She drove from Florida. My mom is the oldest of nine in an Italian family, and the first one of the nine to pass away. Passed away a couple weeks ago. And then his wife died an exact week later. Oh. You figure she probably died from lovesickness. And this particular uncle, when he was a kid, he'd end up vanishing and then knocking on the door at 5 a.m. and Pawpaw and my grandfather, you know, he just thought he was sneaking out and would spank him because he just thought he was sneaking out. And then, you know, they didn't have all the money in the world. He was a butcher and had nine kids. So he would have my uncles, my mom's brothers, you know, don't let uncle, I'm not going to use his name, but uncle so-and-so, don't let him sneak out of the house again. And they never could catch him. They could never, ever catch him. And that's a term I use is alien anesthesia, that they would blank the whole family and take my uncle and do whatever they were doing to him. And figures he's the first one to pass out of all nine of them.
Oh, interesting. Now I want to talk just a little. Don't mention his name, but I am curious. Now you've got me wondering. So are you telling me that now your mom, that would be her brother? Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So her brother did this family have alien visitations or abductions other than the possibility of your mother, you know, that we learned of with you? Did he also, your uncle, did he also have alien abductions or visitations?
That's exactly what we believe. And it's curious and interesting that he would never, ever talk about it, period. his late adulthood, he would not talk about it. But my mother told me about it. And that's the only reason that I even know that it happened in the first place. But, you know, I mean, my uncle shared a room with a couple of his brothers, my uncles, and they tried to catch him. They tried to catch him sneaking out of the house, but in effect, he was not sneaking out of the house. They were doing some kind of, I don't even like to use the word experiment. They were doing some kind of program on him, and I have to think they probably were doing it with my mother also. And that my grandmother on my mother's side was related to the British monarchy in one way or another. And then my father is, and well, in effect I am too, was related to James Knox Polk, who was the 11th president of the United States.
Ooh, I feel special now. Wow, John. Wow, John. Gee whiz. I don't know how to address you now, but.
Well, just call me John.
All right, John.
So let's go even deeper. Is that my parents, this was in Texas back in the 60s, but my parents, and this sounds messed up, but my parents were cousins. And they were third cousins, which, as messed up as that is, it was legal to marry your third cousin. They had a common ancestor among other ancestors, but my Aunt Paula was basically the link between my mother's side and my father's side of the family. And what I believe is that the British monarchy on my mother's side, and then being related to James Knox Polk, the 11th president of the United States, on my father's side, my dad's brother was named James Polk. What I think is it reunited these bloodlines and created my brother and myself also.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, it's not too unusual because I've got something like that, except in my family, not a president, but my husband's related to Prince Charles. He's Charles. He's the 26th cousin of, you know, in the line of Prince Charles from England. But so not necessarily uncommon. Yes, back then people were definitely marrying their cousins, no matter what line, first cousin, second cousin, third cousin. It happens. So that's interesting. Now, so was it your mother and your uncle, or was there anyone else? Because they had a lot of kids also being abducted or visited by any kind of an alien force.
You know, it was more my mom's side of the family, that's for sure. Was dad visited? It's possible. I mean, my dad, at 33 years old, became a college president. And at the time, at 33, imagine that number, 33, but at 33 years old, he was the second youngest college president in the United States.
Yeah.
at the time. So some of the things that have happened to my family, I mean, just more fortuitous than most people could even imagine.
Yeah.
I think there's something in the cards there with my family on all sides, you know, mom, dad side. We're both sides of the family are very, very successful in many ways. And then I'm really, out of both sides of the family, I'm really outside of my mother, I'm the only really total spiritual one out of everybody, which I find curious also.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I think that's interesting. So I guess you could call it we call it that we have gifts. What we're really saying is that we have unique characteristics about us or traits that seem to be a little bit more heightened and enlightened than the average person. And there's not, I'm not putting down the typical person. I'm just saying that if you met somebody like yourself, gifted, et cetera, then everybody would be the same and all that. But you start to stand apart and look a little different when you have some of these different traits that are going on within you. Let me move this to one of, I know that everyone's interested in hearing some paranormal and UFO type stories here. So now we know that this stuff has happened to you. We know that it's kind of in your bloodline. We know that something obviously has been going down the bloodline because of the extra talents and the age. And I call them like prodigies or geniuses or whatnot. There is something that is, I should do a show on that if I can find enough research on it. You know, individuals that have these extremely unique gifts at very young ages, or like your dad, you know, he's the second youngest president of a university at that age. Yes, that's a little bit unheard of. You don't really see that in this day and age, but I can't say it doesn't happen. I did know a gal who graduated with, not personally, but kind of personally, when I worked at a vet school, and she graduated with her veterinarian degree at the age of 16. She would be probably the youngest person that I know of back in my day. This is back in the later 80s, who actually graduated at, you know, a 16 years old. I mean, you're still in junior high and senior high during those days, and she's already getting her doctorate degree. It's very interesting. Okay, so John, let's talk a little bit about, I want to start with the paranormal, because I think that the listeners might want to hear a couple of your unique stories with you, since you're, I call them a beacon, so you obviously attract things to you or around you or near you. And so tell us a little bit about some paranormal stories that you can share that seem to be quite interesting and unique.
Oh, wow. I began. Okay, so I'm a Reiki master instructor also.
Okay.
And in the year 2011, I became a Reiki master instructor, and I also became an ordained minister. I'm a metaphysical minister from the University of Sedona. And after I completed all that education, I started to see things unlike ever before. But back in 2009, my grandfather on my dad's side, so my full name is John Marcus Polk. So my grandfather, I'm his namesake. So my grandfather, my dad's father, on dad's side, John Marcus Polk, he died in 2009. And I can remember flying from Florida to Texas to go to his wake and then eventually his funeral. And of course, just as sad as it could be, and I, you know, fly into George Bush International Airport in Houston, Texas, and then drive 2 hours north with my brother to go to a wake, which is incredibly sad. And you know, show up, everybody's crying, and just as sad as it could be. And it was an open casket wake. And I remember I walk up to my grandfather, and he's laying there in a casket, and I touch his hand, and I start crying. And I started to choke on my own tears.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, I cannot breathe.
Hmm.
It felt like somebody was strangling me.
Hmm.
I'm scared out of my mind, and I started to white out. You've heard of blackout. Well, I was whiting out, and whiting out is from lack of oxygen deprivation, lack of oxygen going to your brain. I was starting to white out, and I could feel this scary tingle come across my whole body as I could not breathe. And my brother comes up to me, and he grabs me and he holds me, and I hear him yelling 911, 911. And right when I felt like I was losing consciousness, and I was, all of a sudden my air passage completely opened up and I could breathe again. It was like, what just happened to me? I have no idea. And after that happened, I started to see spirits and UFOs, and I've been seeing them my whole life, but then I started to see them more than ever before. And what I think happened is that when you're in that kind of life or death situation, and, you know, yeah, choking on my own tears, but in effect, I could not breathe. I could not breathe. It felt like my throat was in a vice grip and something was strangling me. That's the way I felt. But after that, I come back home to Florida, and I started to see things unlike I'd ever seen before. So I was dating a girl at the time, and one night something tells me to go outside, and whenever something like that happens, I always listen. So I go outside, and I look up into the sky. This is prior to me having night vision goggles or anything like that, and I see this triangular formation of stars, and I'm staring at it, and I see one of the stars move, and then it would snap right back into place. And it would move, and it would snap right back into place. And I text the girl that I was dating at the time, and her sister and her sister's boyfriend, who lived about a mile away from my house, were looking at the same thing at the same time. And all of us really had no idea why we were outside in the first place. You know, so something communicated with us and told us to go outside to see this. And that happened after my grandfather's funeral. And then 2 years later, becoming a Reiki master and an ordained metaphysical minister, I started to see things more and more and more than ever before. And this was prior to me ever even having a pair of night vision goggles. And then the conductivity of the paranormal, supernatural was happening more and more and more all the time. And then in 2014, it started to really peak. And then I went to my first UFO conference in 2014. And then that unlocked a whole new Pandora's box that I never even knew existed.
Interesting.
So, oh, yes, yes, definitely. But that near-death experience, and I had had a bunch of near-death experiences also where I should have died multiple times.
And they and when that situation happened, when you were, of course, someone would probably say, like, you went into some kind of shock or something like that. Did you ever talk to a doctor regarding what had happened to you to see if there was anything physically wrong with you?
No, it never even occurred to me to do that. You know, after everything happened, I was at least seemingly fine. I mean, I couldn't tell anything was wrong with me, so I had no reason to go to a doctor. I did talk about my experience, and, you know, when I moved into my house in Florida back in 2002, the house was totally haunted. It was built on top of an Indian reservation. And I would have friends over, and we'd see the lights turn on and off, and all kinds of crazy, anomalous activity would happen on my property all the time. And my friends would tell you that it'd just be my sworn witnesses, because they were there and witnessed it happening all the time.
Yeah, Florida is a very haunted state. By chance, was it anywhere down near Key West?
No, it was close to Casadega. Have you heard of Casadega?
Mm-mm. No, where is that located?
Casadega is, so I lived in Orlando, but Casadega is about halfway between Orlando and Daytona Beach.
Yeah, that I'm familiar with. I've been to Daytona and been to Orlando, so I know exactly now where you're speaking of. But that whole state of Florida, and the world is all haunted. I people are like, oh, what's the most haunted state? And everyone's like, well, my state. Well, no, actually, if you think hard enough, and you're in a lot of these places, all the states can be haunted in various ways. And people think that when you're out in the middle of nowhere, like, for example, in Alaska or other places where it's just plain old land, they think, oh, there's nothing, that nobody died out here. But they don't realize that a lot of this land has also been, you know, roamed on by many, you know, Indian tribes or wars that went on or this or that or whatever. And people don't see that on a daily basis, so they just don't, it doesn't register. But some of the land is very much imprinted with the past and everything. And whatever happened down in Florida, especially with all of these interesting things that you went through in that house, you begin to wonder, did you ever put two and two together as to who might have been in that house and what they really wanted?
I'm glad you asked that question, because I had some ghost hunters come to my house. And I lived on the corner of Enka Avenue, so E-N-K-A. So Enki is the brother of Enlil of the Anunnaki. And then the Enka, not Inca, but Enka Indians, E-N-K-A, lived in that part of Central Florida.
Hmm.
And where they lived, I lived up on top of a hill, and then not far from where I lived was a creek. And so you figure the native, because it rains all the time in Florida, especially during the summer. So instead of living right on the creek, they lived on higher ground above the creek because it would flood.
Right.
And so where I lived on a corner, had a corner lot, had a fairly big house. And so instead of them living right on the creek, because because the creek would flood. They lived on the higher ground and would go down to the creek to get water. And I know where I lived was basically probably where the chief lived and where the majority of the tribe lived. So I had some ghost hunters come up to my house, and they thought they knew what they were doing, but they were very much amateurish. And, you know, I watched their very juvenile techniques as ghost hunters, and I learned a lot by watching them make mistakes. And what I learned with I don't even like to use the word ghost, because that usually implies something negative. But I like to use the word angels, because when you say angels, it's almost always construed as something positive. But when you work with angels, you know, they were sitting there telling them what to do. And it's the same thing with the UFOs. You don't tell them what to do. You ask permission to see them in the first place.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so they have all these EVPs and EMFs and all these different devices for at least trying to interpret if they're there or not. And they're kind of talking to them like they were puppy dogs. And I'm like, and me and I had a friend with me. Her name was Maria. And we're watching them, and we're like kind of criticizing them. We're like, you're talking down to them like they're stupid, you know, and you're actually thwarting the activity by being kind of condescending and talking down to them. But whatever, my property was totally lit up with all kinds of paranormal activity. And I would have friends that would come over, and we'd see UFOs from my yard. It didn't happen all the time, but we would see UFOs from my yard. And I lived right behind Universal Studios in Florida, where there's all this light pollution and everything. Mm-hmm. We'd see all kinds of stuff from my property.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I'm a visualizer. So when guests tell their stories and stuff like that, I actually sit there and visualize and actually kind of go into their world and see what's going on while the story is being told. And then that brings up more questions, of course. So when you're in your house, yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I just had a guest on the other night who's also an avid investigator, does so very respectfully. And one of the things, especially listeners, if you are avid investigators, or if you want to use the word ghost hunter, you can. I like to say ghost searching. Provoking the spirit is not necessarily the way you're going to always draw them out of the situation. And if you want to have some kind of negative attachment, I've haunted 3 homes that I lived in, and I wasn't provoking when I went to some of these properties. In fact, I was quite the opposite, and they still came home with me. Be careful, as I say in my show, what you wish for, because, you know, I just listened to someone the other night who was talking about how they went on to a property, and I don't know if they're really provoking or anything, but there was something very negative that was on the property, and it caused, this thing caused a lot of grief once they went and returned to their homes. One wanted to all of a sudden commit suicide, and this is sincere stuff. It wasn't that the person felt this way the whole time, but, you know, and then another one almost ran into a tree, and, you know, so these things are real. So you try to keep your mind more positive and clear, and you might actually have a decent encounter with whoever. But when you're in that house, what was the scariest thing that, I mean, I know that by now you're aware of your gifts and you're aware of some of the things that have been going on around you. Did anything happen in that house that really kind of scared you to the point where you're like, whoa, maybe I should just get out of this house? And did you go through anything like that, John?
I did. So I started working at Universal Studios, and I was doing sales. And then ultimately I became a sales trainer for Universal. And I met a lady that was doing the ghost tour for the Titanic exhibition in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And she was very powerful and incredibly psychic. I met her. I was a DJ karaoke guy for 20 years, entertainment, singing, dancing, DJ karaoke, whatever. And I meet her at a conference where a friend of mine couldn't do the gig, so he gave it to me. That was definitely meant to be. And it was all psychics and mediums. And my job was just to simply play music, not do anything else but play music. Mm-hmm. And I'm very psychic myself, and I played all the right music based on what I saw, and everybody loved what I played. I didn't say one word. I didn't have to. And this lady approached me, and she was doing the ghost tour at the Titanic exhibition. And so I met her and her best friend. They're both psychics, and they're both there. And I said, could you please come to my home and help me work on some energy that I want to, how about, put in a different place? You know, so, you know, you don't want to use negative terms. So you know, I would like for this energy to just relocate. And so her and her friend came to my home, and she had a dream catcher. She brought it, was like a staff with a dream catcher on the top, mm-hmm. and she propped it up against my couch. And so she's like, well, let's meditate. So what do? We sit down on the couches, chairs, relax, meditate, and all of a sudden the dream catcher falls on the floor.
Don't leave us hanging, John. Everybody, head on over to part 2 as this story gets a little bit more creepy.